Hey guys, welcome to Overcrest. I'm Chris.
And I'm Jake.
How do I sound, Jake? Do I sound back to my regular normal
self? You sound so much better.
Out what it was. It was the Chrome. I did a Chrome update on this computer, and Chrome has a plugin in the back end now that automatically adjusts gain. And gain is basically anytime you turn up the wattage of something, you add more power to it. It gets louder, but it also gets noisier. So you have, there's all kinds of different gains. Like, yeah, even ISO is considered gain. Like if you have a, if you've noticed on your digital camera, if it's dark and you take a photo, it's always grainier.
Yep.
Right. So like the sensor on your camera, what it does is it turns up the voltage on the sensor to make it more sensitive to light. And then, but that increased voltage adds digital noise. Gain is what is happening. So you can have gain in video. You have gain in audio. I'm sure there's other places to have gain, too, that I am not thinking of. Anyway, hopefully.
In the gym, Chris. Gains. Getting those gains.
Gains. That's gains, not gain. That's a little bit different. So here we are, the day before I leave for SEMA with Jeff to go hang out and, canoodle. Can we say that we're basically canoodling?
That's not right. Nope. That's the right context.
What's canoodling?
Schmoozing.
I think canoodling is the right word.
Schmoozing is better than canoodling. Canoodling, you're going to be on the couch together, fireside, and like before you're making out, you know, you're kind of like cuddling and canoodling. That's
The meaning of canoodle
you're gonna be
is
doing
to engage
that. I actually don't know your intentions.
The meaning of canoodle is to engage in amorous embracing, caressing, and kissing. Well, hopefully I don't canoodle with anybody in Vegas.
Yep.
As my wife will be pissed.
As I said.
Yeah, I changed my mind. I'm no longer canoodling. I'm just schmoozing.
No,
yeah.
I don't think so. Schmoozing, exactly. Yeah, so that'll be exciting.
Really
I'm sorry,
be...
I'm going
to
miss it. I have all the...
No, you're not.
I guess.
So here's the thing. I think once you do SEMA one time or two times, it's enough. Every time I talk to anybody that goes all the time, they kind of loathe it. Although the people that say they've loathed it generally seem to have a pretty good time when they're there. So I don't know if it's kind of like this thing where a lot of people or a lot of guys
it's one of those things.
Oh, yeah.
You say you loathe it, right?
You say you loathe it. Just kind of like
maybe it's type 2
fun. Wife for an
Would that
excuse.
Be considered type 2 fun?
Type 2 fun. No, I don't think so. A lot of guys will use their wife as an excuse. Like you go to buy a car and you're like, oh, I got to check with my wife or I got to check with the old ball and chain. And I think it's kind of like this. This thing that guys do, but they really don't mean that their wife is a total buzzkill, but they say she is anyway. And I think maybe this is the same. It is probably going to be about the same as last time, but I think it's important to go there and see people in person and hang out, you know, especially for us, you know, being from the annals of the Midwest. We're supposed to get 2 inches of snow today. I don't think it happened. I haven't looked outside. I drew all the curtains shut and am not looking. Is it snowing?
I did see some flakes in the air, but yes.
Yeah, it's
no,
over.
It's not snowing right now.
I'm currently freezing in the garage. I have no heat in my garage. I had this friend, his name was Jake, and about a week ago when it was like 60 degrees, I said, hey, Jake.
Friend.
Oh, wait, that's you. That's you we're talking about. Yeah. I said, hey, man, I need help putting the garage heater in. And you said, absolutely, I'll be there tomorrow. And tomorrow came, and I was all ready, and I had a car pushed outside. And he called me and said, go fuck yourself. And so I still have no no garage heat at all.
We'll
get some garage heat back in here.
I don't know how accurate that story is, but...
Well, yeah, it's totally 100% accurate.
That'll be good.
Everything I say is 100% accurate. One thing that I think is cool that's kind of happening in the Overcrest world is, as you guys know, we now record remotely, but we are now thinking of not recording remotely, and I'm excited to start looking for a more utilitarian space for Overcrest for storage of vehicles. And really this stems from the van that you created. So this is all your fault. You have created the van, which is now... I think it's kind of in the vein of Flat Surfaces Inc. If you buy a flat surface, you will fill it with things. And I think the van is the same way. If you buy a van, you will fill the van with things. So now we have a van full of things. And after the pop-up shop and the film festival and everything else, I tried to, it was funny, like I had, there was stuff that we bought to do film festival rally things. And I was immediately like trying to give them to Marvin, who's the guy that ran the salvage yard that the film fest was held at. I was like trying to put stuff in a pile to give to Marvin. And I was watching like Jeff take stuff out of the pile and put it in the van. And then I would take stuff out of the van and put it in the pile. And then it would go from the pile back in the van. And I would be like, hey, we got to get rid of this stuff. Otherwise we're going to be like perpetually collecting stuff. By year, like year 5 years from now, we're going to have five van loads worth of crap. So we got to try and be, I think we have to be really careful with the amount of stuff that
a fleet of badass
just
vans.
Keep buying vans. Just keep buying old shitty vans.
Yes.
What'd you get in the mail?
I love this plan so
was
much.
It today or what'd you get in the mail yesterday?
Oh my God. So was that you?
It was not me. I swear to God, it wasn't me. I didn't do it.
Really? No? Okay.
100% on my scout's honor.
So yeah, as yes, that's the Scout Center. Okay, so as we heard last
week.
Wait,
no, that's this.
There was,
is that Scout Center?
Wait, this? I didn't even see what that was. That was just gang symbols. Now you're just throwing gang symbols over there.
Okay.
Regardless, Chris. Last week, we heard about my trials and tribulations that were a BMW 2002 on the Overcrest Rally. And I basically
specifically
said
that
I have
never
sworn
to
off
one ever. Yeah.
Nope. No, I had high hopes because I was like, oh, I always thought these were cool and I want to experience it and maybe I'll add it to my list of things I want to buy. And it completely ruined 2002s for me. I swore them off for good. I hate those things. I never want to see, own, etc., drive one again. And lo and behold, then in the mail came a Matchbox or Hot Wheel little model of a 2002 in red. It looked exactly like the one I drove and had to sit there and toil and fix over the entire time. And I was just like, har, har. Whoever did this.
Yeah, I thought, I went, as soon as I saw that, I went and looked for one. I was going to buy 50 of them. I was going to, like, but I couldn't find an eBay seller that was selling more than one at a time. I was going to buy every single one in stock and send it to you. But as soon as you hop on eBay looking for Matchbox cars, they go from a dollar to, are they still a dollar at the store? You probably know. You've got a boy.
I do, but I'm trying to remember the last time. I don't remember what they are.
Okay.
I don't know, but they are significantly more expensive when you're looking for a particular one on eBay. Yes, for sure.
Yeah, that's always a problem. All right, so I want to do you want to run a couple of talk about a couple of our partners first before I get into something else?
Yeah, tell us first what we're getting into and then I'll do some ads here.
So I did we posted a teaser of this a little bit on just like regular podcast stuff. You can add stuff as a teaser and it gives people like a 60-second listen on something in hopes that they'll capitulate and sign up for something. In this case, it was the Drivers Club. I really wanted to, I'm still trying to get people to, you know, participate in the Drivers Club and be part of what we're doing here on a more intimate level. And what I chose to throw out there was an article I wrote, and I don't, there might be a little bit of redundancy here because I don't remember exactly how I explained this in the Drivers Club episode that I put out. But I kind of released it privately as a Drivers Club thing because I'm a little bit self-conscious about it. And I think one of the reasons why I'm self-conscious about it is it's kind of a mental health topic. And I got really, really sick after COVID. I had long COVID for, I don't know, 6 or 7 months where I was really, really sick, really ill, pretty much was ready to die. You know, from a mental health perspective, from a physical perspective, it was not good. I was in a bad place, and it changed me permanently.
You've
known me for a while now. There's a lot of things about my personality that I think have changed just because of the experience that I had with that, and some of the ups and downs. Yeah. I mean, it was antidepressants, anti-anxiety stuff. It was medications to keep my temper down because this made me feel this way, and there was a lot of drugs, and it was like none of it really worked. It just kind of made things worse, or it just changed the perspective on things, or it made me completely numb. And I've always been a person that,
right,
I've always been a person that was very, I consider myself a strong person. You know, there's, I don't panic. I don't ever have, never had anxiety before. Nothing really threw me for a loop. Right. And you can probably relate with this when we would talk about, we'd be in meetings and you were talking about how to be more sensitive in the meetings to other people's feelings. And what did I always say? What was my comment always? Or my general sentiment?
I'd like, they need to cowboy up. Like, it's,
yeah, suck it up.
I don't know.
Why do I have to be like,
how would you describe
why do I have
it?
To?
Yeah, suck it up.
Yeah,
that's a better way of saying it.
Suck it up. Yeah, suck it up. Why am I being touchy-feely about any of this? And I was very, right. I'm trying to explain how I used to be or the person that I was. I think I was very dismissive, yeah, of other people's emotions and feelings because I had my own worldview, and I was pretty sure that the worldview that I had was accurate, and that if the worldview that I was portraying wasn't the worldview that, and I guess maybe worldview is the wrong word, maybe the perception of how you should interact with the world or how you should handle certain things or deal with certain things as, yes, they're thrown at you should be done in a certain way. And I didn't have much patience for diversity and how other people might deal with
those
things.
They were very rigid, I would say.
Yes, it was very rigid. That's a good way of putting it. And I think my father is that way too, which is probably why we don't get along, because two people that think that way, it doesn't work out. It's not good. Anyway, so I was a very strong person in my own mind. I don't, in hindsight, and this is why I didn't post this publicly, is because I'm pretty self-conscious about talking about this stuff. But from the conversations I had with the Drivers Club members, of they're the ones that convinced me to write the article in the first place, from a conversation that we had in a little Drivers Club get together that we did on the Discord. They convinced me to write
That's
it about
right.
it in the first place.
Yeah.
And then when I narrated it and gave it to them, they're like, dude, you can't harbor this. You can't just, you know, you need to get this out there. And I don't know at what point I have responsibility to share these things and share my experiences from the platform that we have. At my own expense, you know, I still feel weird talking about this stuff. I don't really like talking about it. I don't really enjoy putting my personal experiences and feelings and the things that have happened to me out there in such a plain, stark, and naked way. But if it can help some
right,
other
it's,
people,
it's vulnerable, right?
It really is, and I truly yeah. don't like it. It makes me very uncomfortable. But if it helps other people, and my words and experiences can help other people get through certain things, then I think it's worth it. I'm willing to make that sacrifice. And like I said earlier, I used to say, feel like a very strong person. And I feel like, and I had felt that, you know, being more open about things would make you seem weak. But I think as time has gone on and I've dealt with certain things, I think it's the opposite. I think that not being able to accept and kind of confront issues that you have and being open to other people's feelings and concepts and emotions and acknowledge that you might have weakness is actually the weakness. I think it truly is. I think being strong and is being able right. to, you know, accept different situations as they're thrown at you and have an open mind. Having an open mind is probably one of the strongest things that you can do. And all of this changed me in that
Absolutely.
Way, probably for the yeah. better. And, you know, we've had private conversations about how working with me has been like. A lot of people have known me for in this community for almost 25 years. I have markedly changed over the last 25 years, probably even over the last couple of years. And I wanted to share this. This is something yeah. that, you know, we did for Patreon members only, Driver Club only. But yeah, like I said, we're going to share it with everybody. It's kind of not by my choice. It's kind of what everybody's kind of pushing to do.
It's a very powerful piece. Yeah, no, I think it's the right choice, though, and I commend you for doing that. So before we get into it here, I think it's a perfect time to talk about our sponsors. Petrolbox is a monthly service made specifically for the automotive enthusiasts. Each month, they carefully select items, including tools, detailing supplies, apparel, garage gear, stickers, and publications to be sent right to your doorstep. It's a curated selection of the latest, greatest gear in the industry, and there's actually two different levels of subscription to choose from. The Petrobox Basic costs less than $20 a month, while the Petrobox Premium gets you even more gear for $39.95 a month. Check them out at mypetrolbox.com, and be sure to use the code OVERCRAST at checkout to get $6 off your first month. And did I mention, with the holidays coming up, it makes a great gift. We also have to mention CSF Cooling, who have always been at the forefront of quality products for a fair price, with a rich history stretching over 7 decades. They provide the best high-performance and OEM Plus cooling systems on the market today. CSF offers over 3,000 different cooling applications for the most popular makes and models on the road today, from classic copper brass radiators for Land Cruisers, Jeeps, and Datsuns.
Hold on. How many, and there's a delay. That's why we want to start to getting together in person again. How many makes and models of cars, like if you had to count all the makes and models of cars that are on the road today, how many do you think there are?
I mean, there's because a lot.
When they talk about 3,000, they're talking about different applications too. It's like this car had air conditioning, this car had transmission cooler, this radiator has a transmission cooler built in, blah, blah, blah. So there's 3,000 different variations. But how many makes and models do you think are truly out there on the road?
On the road, you figure it's the last, realistically, it's the last 25 years of vehicles that you're seeing, some more than others. I don't know. It's like 3,000, you're right, seems like a huge catalog, right?
Yep. Okay.
I don't know. Are you looking it up right now? That's his research.
Cars and Automakers database. Current listing, 130 brands, 7,901 models. I'm sorry, 7,091 models and 29,813 engine variations. Do you know how many engine variations we're going to have and sold in new cars by 2030? This many, Jake.
Yeah, one. Okay, you get one.
One.
But, that's not a variation, though, Chris. A variation requires to be able to vary from something. So it's no variation.
Yeah, you can't have a variation of one thing because it's just one.
That's a very good point.
Yeah.
Right.
Anyway, sorry. Continue with how awesome CSF is.
CSF Cooling. Yeah, they're the ones that do have variation and the applications to go along with it. From the classic copper and brass radiators you find on Land Cruisers, Jeeps, and Datsuns, to vintage 80s Mercedes, BMW, Audi, and Porsche platforms, all the way up to new vehicles. Check out their expanding classic series lineup. And most notably and exciting for us personally is their new offering for air-cooled 911s. So be sure to check them out at csfrace.com or on social media.
All right, guys, let's canoodle together over my article, How a Piece of Shit Car Saved My Life. Somewhere in Nevada, surrounded by sky, sand, scrub, and stone, on a vanishing point road converging just as far forward as it did back, into the plane of consciousness crossed a thought. It struck like a one note of a rift of a song that couldn't quite be placed, or a word pirouetting on the tip of your tongue. As the leather of the wheel creaked and wrinkled on the stress of squeezing for the idea, the epiphany revealed itself. It felt like a song drop, as if the entire drive had been some sort of dreamy, ethereal thing leading up to it. This goddamn thing saved my life. Then the car died. It was out of gas. It's a piece of shit, really. Just another example of a once-loved and regaled car that was eventually abandoned. A victim of deferred maintenance, creating a stack of bills that just outweighed its usefulness. From a quick investigation into the contents of the glove box and door pockets, it was pretty easy to predict what happened. Someone got old. The keys were dymo printed with club and Benz. Whether the club was an actual club full of dentists and lawyers or the club steering lock remains a mystery. In the glove box was an embossed type Johnson & Johnson first aid kit filled with band-aids, gauze, and other items that were clearly made before everything got exported to China. Each item looked different than anything made today. It was all interesting, cute, or handsome in some way. Fonts looked great with excellent kerning and serifs. Injection molded edges were smooth and clean. The box even snick-snicked open and closed in a satisfying way. There were also some 70s sunglasses. I looked terrible in them, but I wore them anyway as I rifled around through the rest of the compartments. There wasn't much else of note aside from a spiral-bound map book, 500 section pages of everywhere in Minneapolis and St. Paul circa 1988. Yep, someone had died. No one hauls this stuff around for 30 years. They died in the 90s, and then the car died. Both forgotten, left to rot into the earth. That's just how it works. Bjorn Anderson is an interesting man. Walking into his shop is a diverse experience. There's a Pierce Arrow parked next to a Lamborghini Diablo. On the hoist are a Rolls-Royce Silver Spur in need of CIS work and an early 70s Corvette with the names of each of its original owners hand-painted above the door handle. Doreen and Dick, together forever in fiberglass. Perfect. Classical music from the local NPR music station floats down from the ceiling over them as Bjorn and I struck a deal on a 1972 Mercedes 250. It lived outside. A time lapse, if you had one, would show it shimmying back and forth around the shop a few times, snow piling up, then melting, the sun spinning around a zillion times. Bjorn and I standing out there going, man, that would be a cool project, in a quick blip more than a few times. Eventually, one of these times was the time. $1,000 turned into a hair more once he remembered there were Euro lights in the trunk. The thing did not run. Both ridiculously complicated Zenith carburetors were in the back seat. They were rebuilt, and damn if the thing shouldn't just run if you could get them installed and get some fuel up there. Probably. Either way, it wasn't Bjorn's problem anymore. January 3rd, happy birthday. Or if it's 2022, go fuck yourself day. I found myself in Los Angeles with my wife. I'd left my 911 there after the Overcrest rally. It was at a shop, getting an oil change, a checking over, and then we'd drive it up the coast. Fun times. Instead, the engine on the 911 blew up and I got COVID. I spent the week in a hotel shitting, puking, and lying down. It was the beginning of the worst period of my entire life. To impart the gravity of the situation, I've got to talk COVID. I know, you're sick of it. Me too. I'll make it as brief as I can to get to the point across, and I'm going to be very candid, something I've only done for a few people. And that was you guys, Drivers Club. That was you. From January to April, I had to crawl to the couch into the bathroom. I had no energy. I felt like I was moving a piano from room to room, but the piano was my body. Not only was it heavy, but it was out of tune. My heart would race for no reason, pounding with unreasoned adrenaline spikes. I couldn't focus. And I started to get anxiety and depression. It was uncontrollable. I never experienced any mental health issues before. Panic attacks happened for no reason, and then the hypochondria took over, and the anxiety about anxiety started creeping in. I was falling apart. I had a piece of paper on my desk that said, tomorrow. I underlined it. I knew things would get better. They had to. After a few months, I'd underlined tomorrow almost to the bottom of the page. I was not getting better, and I'd lost hope. I scoured the internet, Reddit, Twitter, looking for answers. How could it be possible that in today's high-tech world, no one knew anything? It didn't and still doesn't make sense. I clearly had long COVID, which is essentially post-viral syndrome, something you can get after any serious viral disease like mono or SARS. Still, the only recommendation was to focus on later. Science would figure it out eventually. I became acutely aware of time. The length of the days and the shortness of the years came to focus like a months-long Hitchcock shot, and I was the portrait, standing there, stiff, afraid, and worn down. I'd lost 30 pounds. I looked gaunt. I was at the end of my flint. I was ready to die, and I felt like I might. I was obsessed with the fear of where the road I was on led. I had to do something. It came in the form of a car that had two rebuilt carburetors. Damn if the thing shouldn't just run if you could get them installed and get some fuel up there. Probably. It was everything I had to get out to the garage, even if I was still in my pajamas. I forced it on myself. I did little things first because it's all I could do. Getting on the ground and back up again was impossible, so most efforts didn't even involve the car. I did things that felt like I wasn't letting myself down. I cleaned up and tidied the toolbox, moving sockets around and using a hand brush to make things nice up top. It was good for morale. 10 minutes became 20, 20, 30, 30 became an hour. An hour is just enough time to run some fuel lines. The car also needed calipers. At the time, I was filming a bit of a YouTube series on the car. It was a colossal waste of time, but it did help me catch a mistake when I was reviewing footage. The car, being from Minnesota, did have some rust. One of the big M14 big boy bolts that held the knuckle on was seized. I tried everything. I filmed it all. I tried a small wrench led through a series of leverage tricks. I sent it deep into the depths of hell with a torch. In the end, I put a jack handle on the end of a giant breaker bar. It snapped off flush in the hub. I was so determined not to be defeated by the car that I tried to extract it. Air hammer, welding, drills, nothing worked. The hub was destroyed, and I had been a real man and absolutely destroyed it. When I was editing the episode, I noticed something. Before I tell you what I did, I want to emphasize again how difficult being out there was. It was difficult to focus and think. There was a lot of standing in front of the toolbox with the drawer open, wondering why I was there and what I'd come to get. I scrubbed back and forth in Adobe Premiere, looking at what I'd done in disbelief. The entire time I'd been trying to loosen the bolt, I'd actually been tightening it. Righty-loosey, lefty-tighty. I torqued that son of a bitch until I snapped it right off. A class 10.9 M14 bolt has an ideal torque of 250 foot-pounds. I did a little math, and I think I probably tightened that bolt to over 1,000 pound-feet of torque before it snapped off. It was a reminder that I needed to slow down. I thought about mirroring the clip in case someone noticed, but I didn't, and no one did, except me. The tank ended up being corroded, so weeks in, I made a trip to the junkyard to get that and a new hub to replace the one I'd mangled. I brought my daughter along. She made castles in the dirt while I wandered around the graveyard. I thought to myself this was the place like the car should be, but it wasn't. The parallels. The parallels were not beyond me. I was lucky for once, and a new gas tank was in the back seat of a decrepit W114. It was dry as a bone and had a new hub in the trunk. Things were looking up, and with the new tank, sure enough, it ran. It ran well enough that a friend and I replaced every suspension component on the car. We lowered it and tossed on a set of AMG Pentas. The thing was no longer a piece of shit. It ran perfectly and drove the same. I started to get excited about bringing it to the Overcrest Rally. My business partner in the venture, Jeff, asked if he could hand paint a livery on the car. Thinking that thing was once a piece of shit, there's no reason to say no. A few weeks later, he called me. So Chris, on a scale from 1 to 10, how far can I take the livery? I don't know, 10? Just don't make me look stupid and don't make it about how much I hate LED headlights. Jeff Bull is an incredibly talented dude. A branding guy by trade is mixed in with a creative to the core. I had a complete trust in whatever it was he was doing. It took weeks before he called me again. No, he wasn't done. But I better do something about this engine. It was too slow to match the livery. This made my head spin. What could be done to an old Benz? AMG was still in his diapers in 1972, and Mercedes didn't do much outside of official motorsport channels in terms of performance. Along came Ed. Ed loved the Chicago Bears, and he loved Mercedes-Benz. Unfortunately, daily driving an old Benz in Minnesota will doom just about any car, no matter how much you love it. So the story goes with this 1973 Mercedes 280. Ed's Benz, solely named by Ed and emblazoned on his license plate, was indeed another piece of shit. The first time I hit the gas, the pedal broke off the floor. I reached down and yanked the pedal off the assembly, leaving just a rod to push with your foot while the road whizzed by underneath. What was bad for Ed was good for me, and I lowballed him, I thought, to get the car with the twin cam M110 engine. I managed to score a manual transmission on eBay, a 4-speed. It showed up in a plastic tub covered with duct tape alongside a drive shaft with a shipping label on it. I bought a flywheel brand new from Mercedes. I had no idea if any of it would go together. Surely an enormous twin cam with a manual transmission would be enough for the livery. It's done. Jeff's garage door opened. The light spilled onto the hood, leaving the car vignetted by the darkness of the garage. I felt overwhelmed immediately. I ran my fingers over the hand-painted parts of the car. Every focused brushstroke was there. I talked to Jeff a little bit about how I'd been feeling. tired and gray. But I hadn't really told him. I hadn't really told anyone things were in such a bad way. He explained how the car had been left for dead and then had been resurrected by me. Saved. Not forever. Just extended. I think until that moment, I'd let the car be my distraction. It was a robe to cover myself with. It allowed me to breathe. Now the car was in front of me, reborn in the stark images, full of reminders of death and all the inevitability of it all. On the hood was written, "Driven to death." And on the side, "Gonna die happy." The thing was now the monster under the bed and the demon in the closet, except they were not in their original hiding spots. They were right there. But it wasn't the car that was the problem. It was me. "Jeff, it's going to be really ironic if I die on the rally in this thing." He smirked and just nodded. In the end, he was right. It was too slow with the new livery. The next few months would be spent swapping the engine and installing one of the 3D printed intake manifolds to accept a triple set of Weber carburetors. It had to be at the Overcrest rally. It was a true test. As the car came together, so did I. Despite many hurdles and with a lot of lifting from friends, it left for the rally the day after it was finished. Minnesota, Idaho, to somewhere in Nevada, on the side of the road. I pulled over for gas miles back with a friend. He was in his E28 M5. I picked him up a few hours into a 12-hour drive at another station. The Benz was not running well. It had a miss at partial throttle, lean something or another. It looked like a scene from any 70s movie shot out of the West, laid out perfectly. Shitty old gas station, nowhere. Car drives into the frame and stops at the pump. Dust floats away into the distance. Stunningly handsome driver hops out in a cowboy hat, pulls the hood release and leans under it, peering into the abyss of whatever is wrong with the car. Unlike the movies where the guy just stares at the carburetor with a hat in hand, handkerchief in pocket, I knew exactly what the problem was. One of the 3D printed silica aluminum magnesium manifold runners had cracked. It lasted 3,000 miles. Not bad for a prototype, and big props to Alex Nelson for creating the masterpiece. It had banged itself to death in a part of the crossmember braces that some, but not all, of the W114s have. After 5 minutes with a hacksaw, mine didn't have it either. With a little JB Quick smear on the crack and a break in a barely described as modern plumbing bathroom, I was back on the road again, without gas. The light started flickering about 15 minutes down the road. I needed to go back, but with the asshole move drift I did out of the parking lot, I couldn't. It had been another great scene. The carbs were dorping triumphantly as I left the joint sideways. The owner had burst open the screen door. I couldn't hear him, but I knew exactly what he was saying, and you do too. The only part missing was me waving my hat out the window. Bad part is, karma's a bitch, and now I couldn't go back. I'd already used the spare jerry can I'd saved for when I almost ran out of gas earlier. Idiot. And the heat ripples of the highway behind me revealed a savior, an Urquhartr with a roof rack. A roof rack with a gas can on it. Brilliant. I spent an entire day's worth of driving from Idaho after the weekend's rally, and here I was with two fellow rally drivers on the side of the nowhere road in nowhere, Nevada. It was exactly where I wanted to be. On the side of the road, with friends and no gas, in the midst of an adventure, in the car that saved my life.